Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. But we're going to go a little bit beyond the mind into the actual world of reality, whatever that might be. That seems to be changing its description on so many levels, even in the world of science. And sometimes what we think we know is not the case. I think we're going to have a good time this morning because I have a wonderful guest, Michael Newton, who's with me, and we're going to be talking about research. Yes, you're hearing me correctly. Research about strange Pennsylvania monsters. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Well, it's a delight. Michael, you beat a record that a friend of mine had, and I am just astonished. You've written over 251 books since 1977, and a friend of mine, and this was back in the 80s, he had written, he's since passed away, he had written, by the time he was in his 80s, interestingly enough, I met him in the 80s and he was in his 80s, he had written 130 books. And I thought, that was just amazing. Boy, you must have the fastest fingers in the universe to do 251, either that or you've got someone you talk to that just goes a mile a minute.
Well, I've been at it a long time, but I'm still nowhere near the record. I think there have been several people back in history that have written 1,000 or more books. I doubt I'll ever catch up with them.
Oh, my goodness. 1,000 books written in a lifetime? That's incredible. They must have been real little books.
Well, that could be, too. One of them was in ancient China, so you don't really know how long some of the books were. They might have been pamphlets by today's standards.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say. 1,000 of them? Holy Moses. Anyway, you've done so many books, but I find it interesting, Michael, that your background is diversified in your writing. You have done Western novels. You have done different types of fiction. But I want to know why you got interested in monsters. What was it that spurred you? Is it a guy thing that said you really liked the weird stuff to scare the girls when you were growing up? I knew kids like that. I remember one boy that tried to do that with me. It didn't work very well. He was so disappointed. Anyway, with you, what is it that spurred this interest in monsters?
Well, when I was quite young, as a member of the Cub Scouts, they have the magazine Boys Life. Of course, this would have been in the mid-late 50s. And they had a couple of articles in that magazine about the abominable snowman and the Loch Ness Monster. And I was living in California at the time, also in 1958, when Bigfoot was in the news a lot there for the first time with his name. And so I just started saving clippings. And I've always been fascinated by mysteries in general, unsolved crimes also, anything with a mysterious twist on it. So eventually I had to either throw away all my reference materials or start writing about them, and I decided to try to cash in.
Well, 200 and some odd publications later, you're doing that. This is something you really have a passion for. Now, let's talk about Pennsylvania.
Okay.
We have so many locales in the country. What was it about Pennsylvania that intrigued you and where you said, ooh, we got a bunch of real good stuff here, and how long did it take you to acquire the information? This book is loaded with all kinds of stuff. How long did that take you?
Well, some of the material, as I say, goes back to my childhood, but with the internet now and books and magazines that have been published and some groups that I belong to that publish data online, it took me about a year to write it. As far as the actual collection, you know, it could go back for decades.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working my way around the country, thanks to Schiffer Books, doing sort of a state-by-state review of monsters. Previously with them, I've done the Pacific Northwest, California, Kentucky, and Indiana, and they're editing one now that I did in Ohio. So if I live long enough, I'm going to try to cover the whole country.
Oh, that is amazing. Right in your introduction, you bring out some facts about this wonderful state. You say Pennsylvania witnessed some of America's earliest and most infamous labor violence. There was a police massacre of 19 unarmed strikers at Latimer in September 1897. The Industrial Revolution, boy, Pennsylvania was right there at the beginnings in the United States. And you go into the connection with George III. You talk about all kinds of interesting details. Then you mention the first recorded encounter with an alien big cat. And I chuckled because alien big cat was converted to ABC. And it was a hairy panther resembling an African lion, and it was shot with its mate and cubs in 1797. Now, that just, in today's world, we go, why would someone do that? Why didn't you capture it so we could study it? But we have
in those days, of course, they're shooting anything that moved, especially if it was considered a threat to wildlife or people.
Yes, and then the first known sighting of a giant snake, unknown to science, logged in 1820. A state's gorilla report in 1837. Giant humanoid remains unearthed. The skeletons were found in 1860s. Flying serpents, thunderbird, sea serpents. Wow, you must have had a good time with all of this.
Oh, it was great fun, and I think you've more or less summarized there why Pennsylvania was a good choice. also, the publishers in Pennsylvania, so they were more interested in it than usual. They were kind of surprised to find some of these things had been creeping around in their backyard, so to speak.
Now, we all are aware how in many parts of the country, we've even had it here in the Pacific Northwest, where species of fish and other critters come into water areas that threaten the natural inhabitants in those waterways. And snakehead fish, you start your book off with this. What is a snakehead fish, and why is it an undesirable, and where did they find it?
Well, there are several species of snakeheads. They're a large fish. In fact, they featured in several low-budget horror movies over the last few years. They can actually breathe on land for a period of time and make their way overland on their stubby little fins. They're very aggressive predators. They come primarily from southern and southeast Asia, but they found their way to the United States, brought in to put in some areas for sports fishermen, and of course, once they've been put or released as pets when they grew too big to handle, and once they're in the wild, they start eating everything. They endanger all the other smaller species, and so the federal authorities and state authorities all over the country basically hope to wipe them out, but so far they're not having much luck.
Yes, it's about as easy to do as getting rid of the bunny rabbits in Australia once they started multiplying, and the toad over there, and, just all kinds of things. People don't realize that if the predators they bring into environments don't have predators to take care of them, you're going to have an overrun. It's just
right, absolutely. Or when you kill off predators like the snakes or coyotes or wolves in a certain area, then their natural prey just runs wild.
Right. It's just amazing. And we forget those little simple things. Actually, nature is quite complex. But let's talk also about caimans, because they were not native to many areas, but there we go. Again, somebody got one as a pet, released it, and bingo. I know.
Right. Well, they're related to alligators, of course, and they're native to Central and South America, but they've come up in the exotic pet trade. And, you buy one and it gets a little too big for you. Somebody goes out and throws it in the lake or the nearby swamp, especially in the southern states, as in Florida now, where they're overrun with Burmese pythons in the Everglades. Just a week or two ago, they caught one that was over 17 feet long.
Holy Joseph. I mean, that's...
And they believe they're spreading along the Gulf Coast through Alabama, Mississippi, and into Louisiana now.
Mm-hmm. Because it'd be a very comfortable environment for them.
And it's nothing to stop them.
Yeah, I mean, who's going to go after a 17-foot python other than a human being?
It's just, exactly.
Who's going to have room to eat it, number one? And number two, they're just powerful, powerful snakes. They're just amazing snakes. And they can eat pigs, they can eat people.
Jeez, oh, sure. There are cases on record, no doubt.
Oh, absolutely. Now, exotic birds. The emu has been cultivated for its oil, for its meat. This is something that has, especially I think in the last 20 years in the United States, been of interest to people. Emu oil is known for its healing properties. And I was amazed to find that in Pennsylvania, in I think your date here is September 1st, 2008, a state police officer chased an emu, used a taser, the bird fell over dead, and he was going to be in trouble because of that. Now, this is something else that's coming in. Now, emus really make for good eating, if you want to be blunt about that, and because people are cultivating them, but this one was out roaming around.
Right. Well, there are emu farms, of course, at various points in the United States, and also ostrich farms, not only used for, in the case of the ostrich, sometimes for boot leather and so forth, and also for meat. So when some of these pop up in the middle of a town and no one comes to claim them, then it remains somewhat of a mystery. You don't know if it's escaped from a farm and somebody's afraid to admit it, if it's traveled across country, or... no one suggested that they're out there breeding in the wild, but you kind of have to say, you know, when they show up in the middle of Chicago or something like that, or Seattle, and nobody can say exactly how they got there.
Mm-hmm. And also you talk about hogs. Now, you said Pennsylvania doesn't beat Georgia's record. There's a hogzilla.
Right.
And he grew to be 10.5 feet in length, and this was in Georgia, tipping the scales at 1,005 pounds. And if ever you've gone to a county fair, folks, and you look at hogs that are 800 or 900 pounds, you wouldn't want one to get mad at you, I guarantee you. They are powerful animals. They're also extremely intelligent. But one that's over 1,000 pounds? Now, wild hogs, I think they've been on every continent on this planet. Am I wrong? What is it with this?
No, you're absolutely right. They're technically from Europe and Asia. But again, they're something that was brought over here, perhaps with some of the very earliest settlers and colonists.
Mm-hmm.
And once they're released or they escape, then, you know, whether they've come off one of these canned hunting preserves or somebody thought he'd raise them and crossbreed them with domestic pigs to make a hardier stock. Once they get out, then they're on their own, and they'll run around. And you certainly don't want to be standing in front of one with those tusks and several hundred pounds of muscle behind it if it decides to run through you.
Absolutely true, and they can run pretty fast. They're amazing. I was not aware that Pennsylvania has a $241 million swine industry. I know Virginia's big, and the areas in the South, but I had no idea that there was that big an industry in Pennsylvania.
Pork is huge there, and they worry also about the wild hogs carrying different diseases that might decimate domestic livestock.
Yes, it's just like chickens, because chickens have been domesticated and have been on these farms, and what might have been in their immune system, so to speak, from being out in the wild, like the early colonists did, was letting them graze and peck away at different things, eating bugs, all kinds of stuff. It's the same with the hogs, because they are fed, I don't know this for sure, but I believe it's a corn-based diet most of the time.
Primarily, yes.
Right. So the techniques for this, for raising hogs, creates a very sterile environment compared to what a wild pig would be in. I mean, they don't think anything about it. They survive, and they're hardy, and they're strong. But they bring bacteria and all kinds of things that, for hog farmer, it could decimate that hog farm and nothing flat. It's just incredible. Now, you go in to wolves in Pennsylvania. And I know those of you are saying, Donna, you're not talking about monsters, for heaven's sakes. Isn't this what we're supposed to discuss? Well, we need to know about different species of things, I think, first, because wolves were all across this nation, and they have been hunted to extinction. However, I was surprised to find that coyotes were not known. We can talk about wolves for a minute, and then coyotes. Coyotes weren't known in Pennsylvania until 1930. We have an abundance of them here in Washington. They're out on the prowl every night. You can hear them.
Well, and the theory is they're all over Indiana here, too. I hear them at night, just like you say. But the theory is, I suppose, that they've been working their way eastward, perhaps to fill a gap created by the decimation of the wolves due to hunting and habitat destruction. But then again, the one aspect of cryptozoology is studying creatures believed to have been driven to extinction that are still reported as being seen alive and well, like the, out west there you have cougars, you know, and they're recognized mm-hmm. as a species. Anywhere east of the Mississippi, outside of southern Florida, they're considered to be extinct. And yet, year after year, there are hundreds of sightings of them roaming around in the wild.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're smarter than we want to give them credit for. Let's talk about the Felis catus. And a guy by the name of C.H. Shearer, and he lived in Berks County in 1846. The cats have been around forever, but this was an unusual cat. What was so unusual about it?
Well, the species is really still unknown to science. I mean, it was a couple of specimens were shot, and they had very unique pattern of their coats. They were smaller than, let's say, a bobcat or a lynx, larger than a domestic cat, and to this day, no one really knows where they came from, whether they were part of a wild species brought over perhaps from Europe in some way. And they just applied this Latin name to them without any real scientific regimen to explain what it was, and yet they really still don't know where they came from, and they haven't been seen since.
The Black Panther. I've always loved that cat. And of course, there's been movies made about the Black Panthers. It's always been a mysterious animal in the minds of, let's say, South American cultures. They really have a deep respect for it because it is a phenomenal predator. And I was intrigued with the fact that it's been sighted in Pennsylvania, that there's a lot of recorded sightings on a Black Panther. And you would wonder, how could it survive? Would it survive? But hey, it's a cat. Bobcats survive. Cougars survive. Why wouldn't a panther survive?
Well, there's speculation, since Black Panther technically is just a popular name that's applied either to black jaguars or leopards, neither of which should be in the Midwest. Some people think that this may be a melanistic phase of cougars, although no specimen of a black cougar has ever been scientifically confirmed. Others speculate that maybe these were exotic pets released in some way, like you'll hear about a drug dealer being found with a tiger in his basement or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe these were let go. Another theory even claims that perhaps African cats were brought over hundreds of years ago by the early slave traders and escaped or were released. So again, nobody really knows, but they keep cropping up.
Now, there's stories of the giant snakes, and we talked about that, but strip mining. This, you have a photo of a strip mine, which is, when you look at it, something that you just shake your head, because it is stripped. The earth is totally denuded of everything. And these are huge, huge holes in the ground. And giant snake sightings in the 50s. Have they continued to be seen since?
Well, not quite as frequently, but they do still crop up occasionally. There's some people think that the strip mining, which denudes, the entire environment, may have started to wipe out their their original habitats, especially around some areas on the Gettysburg battlefield and so forth. But every once in a while, a report will still filter out, not nearly as frequently as they were in the 1920s and 30s.
Let's talk about the giants. Now, there have been stories historically, even in China. You go back in the Chinese history, they talk about giants. There's biblical references to giants who have walked the earth. There's mythological references of giants that have been in the earth. Now, they actually found skeletons, and something came up just recently, an archaeological dig, where they found some very, very large skeletons, people being 8 feet tall. Well, my goodness, if you've ever been at the airport and seen some of these young basketball players, they're over 7 feet, and they are 8 feet tall. And it's not incomprehensible to me that there were people of that size. Tell us what they found in Pennsylvania.
Well, there have been numerous reports back in the 19th century, particularly, of graves, multiple graves being unearthed with skeletons 9 or 8 to 9 feet tall. In some cases, they claimed that the skulls or the jaw bones were large enough to fit over a normal man's head like he was wearing a football helmet. Some of those stories are disputed now because, for whatever reason, none of the skeletal remains were actually preserved or sent to a museum. So some people argue that they were just made-up stories to sell newspapers, but we really don't know at this great distance in time. It's impossible to say.
Roos, kangaroos, phantom kangaroos. That one, for me, is a bit of a stretch. Of course, in our day-to-day, kangaroos, the only place we've known them to be, is in Australia. So, how'd they get over here?
Well, that's another good question. We know that in England and Scotland, for example, there are populations of wallabies that were brought over by wealthy individuals to put on their estates as a curiosity, when they also brought over hyenas and zebras and whatnot. And so it's possible that something like that may have gone on in the early United States as well, unconfirmed. But there have been a number of cases of kangaroos or apparent kangaroos seen hopping around the Midwest and elsewhere. One or two blurry photographs, it's kind of hard to tell what they are, but they sort of resemble a kangaroo in the far distance. And again, there have been cases where police claim they were chasing them up and down the street and then lost them in some urban area, and the mystery remains unsolved.
In August of 1973, a group of Amish residents of Lancaster County were terrified. Why?
Oh, well, now let me think. I'm going to have to think back because it's been about a year since I turned this book
right.
in.
Right. Well, I'll assist you here.
Okay. Assistance is always welcome.
Yes, sir. It was a beast, and you described it as the size of a good heifer, gray.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Yeah, that was a strange one. It would almost make them think, if they weren't Amish, that they were on some kind of psychedelic trip.
Mm-hmm.
But they swear, you know, literally on the Bible, that what they saw was an actual, almost like a composite creature of some sort. And where that would come from, you know, Lord only knows.
Mm-hmm. And it was described, this is how it was described. Size of a good heifer, gray in color, with a white mane. It had tiger-like fangs and curved horns like a billy goat. It ran upright on two legs and had long, grisly claws.
I couldn't even begin to put a species name on that one. It would,
right.
Because it's almost like somebody did a cut-and-paste monster.
Yes. And when you think about it, when you look at drawings that people did of the creatures they saw in Africa centuries ago.
Oh, sure.
You look at it and said, are you kidding? That doesn't look like a giraffe. Can't you draw? What was it? Well, a lot of times people used this descriptions because it was totally foreign to them, and they did not know how to take the actuality of what was and put it down in the same way as they actually saw it. So the human mind does interesting things. But when it said that they watched it run, they felt like an electric jolt, and it spoke a language and was exceedingly fast. Well, there's a lot of creatures that are faster than humans. There's very few humans that really run all that fast. And
yeah, I've never seen a deer run on its hind legs. There is a small deer in Southeast Asia that occasionally grows two little tusk-like teeth on its upper jaw.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not striped, it doesn't have a big mane, and of course, as far as we know, it doesn't have a language either, so I doubt that that would be what they saw.
Fascinating stuff. Now, there was an event in Bucks County, fairly recent, October 27th, 2003, and there was a reporter, Allison Hawks, who got calls from people. He got, in fact, 17 calls about this creature that they had seen. And there was a crew member of PBS that said, these people are seeing something. We don't know what it is. Tell us about that.
Okay.
Oh, and there was also a hybrid in 2006, August, that came out in a wooded area near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Okay, I'm thumbing through the book as we speak.
148 page.
Aha, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay, well, that was, yeah, I don't know. I described it as having the ears of a fox and the body of a cougar and nose like a jackal. And then, well, what do they say? The tail of a hideous house poodle. Again, it's really hard to say what they had in mind for that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these things, you assume they aren't all drinking heavily when this is going on.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Eric Altman, who contributed some of the illustrations to the book, has investigated this one. But and he didn't believe it was a hoax, but he couldn't estimate what it is. He's done decades of research and everything in Pennsylvania, from UFOs to cougars to Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
And again, what it might be could be some kind of mutant form, I suppose. What exactly would crossbreed to get that appearance is personally beyond me. A dog and a fox, I suppose, could possibly interbreed, but very unlikely that a cougar would be breeding with a poodle.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. And you wonder if somewhere along the line someone has decided to do something, done some scientific experimentation. But these mutations or whatever is seen, this, when it happens, it's so rare. It's not like you're going to see it every week. It's like in our neighborhood, we had a cougar in a neighbor's yard that we watched. Nobody else saw this cougar. We were at home, our Scottish Terrier, son, beautiful animal. I guesstimate it was about 2 years old. Absolutely gorgeous. Perfect night. Came and went very quietly, but utterly magnificent. No one else saw it. There wasn't anybody else wandering around that night. It was just an amazing experience. And you just, you know, these things happen. And when they happen, now I can identify this, but if you see something that is an anomaly in your experience, you're going to be hard-pressed to be able to really describe it well. You're going to use whatever you have in your own experience to add to that description. You also have some fascinating information on Mothman. And of course, some horror films have been made on this. You have just so much, there's so much good material in there.
Well, thank you.
You know, Michael, this is the type of book that I think is great for anybody to read. Because what it does is bring forth information, one, that has been recorded. Two, you're not hesitating to talk about myths and history, time frames, living environments, and that's something we have to keep in mind. Your point about the snakes losing their environment, that can happen with a lot of creatures, with the development of population. We literally exterminate species when the humans go in and take over areas. And we wipe out their food source. So if
the fear is that we may be losing species now that we don't even know actually exist.
Oh, that's a fact. That I think is absolutely a fact. We can't possibly know all of the species of life that there are. I love it when they find something they knew and they go, wow, we thought we knew everything. Nope.
Just a week or two ago in Oregon, not far from you, they're calling it a giant spider. It's just not, like sci-fi giant, but one of the biggest in the United States found to live only in a particular cave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And who knew until somebody stepped in and went, oh, yuck, spiders. Good God.
Absolutely.
The size of them. It's amazing.
Why is it on my head?
Oh, please. That's a visual I didn't need. Thank you very much, Michael. For those of you that would be interested in finding out more about Michael and his books, he has gone across the board in research, and he's still doing his research. Check out michaelnewton.homestead.com. And Newton is spelled N-E-W-T-O-N. Again, michaelnewton.homestead.com. Michael, it's always wonderful to have you on the air. I love talking about the weird, the unusual, the fabulous, the fantastic, and you do a good job of including research on this. It's just a joy. Have a
well, thanks very much.
Today. You're welcome. It's been a delight. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to come back in just a minute. Don't go away.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
An avatar is coming to the Seattle area. Lovingly known as Yogi Raj, he will be doing these upcoming events. Saturday, August 25th, 6 to 8 p.m., Healing and Enlightenment Workshop. This is free, an interactive event. Donations accepted. Location, Asian Resource Center, 1025 South King Street, Seattle, Washington, 98104. Tuesday, August 28th. Yogi Raj will be teaching and sharing his knowledge in a very special class at the Ascension Into Life Foundation. Visit ascensionintolifefoundation.org for more details. Friday, August 31st to Monday, September 3rd, Kundalini Kriya Yoga of Babaji Retreat with Yogi Raj. Location, Fort Warden, Port Townsend. Each of these events will offer you the opportunity to learn about the ancient Himalayan knowledge for self-mastery called Kundalini Kriya Yoga of Babaji. For more information, visit sidhanath.org. You can register for the event through northwestevents.eventbrite.com or call for reservations 909-907-9605.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I just love stories of unusual things, and Michael Newton just does an incredible job of research. Hey, telephone lines are open, and if you'd like to chat with me today, I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. If you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. I'll give you my insights, and then after that, you can ask me a question about anything you like. Harriet Beecher Stowe. Almost all of us are aware of that very famous name. And she had a bit of wisdom that I wanted to share with you today. She said, when you get into a tight place and everything goes against you, until it seems like you cannot hang on another minute longer, it is then when you should never give up. For that is just the place and time when the tide will turn. Never give up. The place and time when the tide will turn. It's just so fascinating that as individuals, in our societal mentality, as it is, we're supposed to have everything instantaneously. That is the perception, anyway. Well, I can tell you, it's not been my experience. I've been one of those individuals that usually has had to walk a path of patience, persistence, diligence, and hard work. And it's something that many times people will walk around in their pity pots and they'll say, life is just not fair. Absolutely true. It is not fair. But it's what you think and what you do that makes a difference. And this instant gratification positioning, it just isn't going to work for you. But we see it in television shows. We listen to stuff on media. We have propaganda that is put out on so many different levels. It is the individual that's willing to understand that occasionally there may be someone that wins a gazillion-dollar lottery, and we all go, woohoo, I wish it were me. However, the statistics on something like that is that because someone doesn't understand what they can do with it, they end up going broke. Even if you won that multi-million dollars, what are you going to do with it? How are you going to manage it? People say, oh, I'll just have the time of my life. Well, you might. But if you don't understand how to take care of things, if you cannot be a good custodian, and if you're not willing to learn new things, you're going to find yourself always on the short end of the stick. And it's important to understand that this is life experience. And I love the diversity. I am just absolutely amazed at how one person may become a guru, somebody else becomes a mechanic, another person becomes an opera singer, someone else becomes a chef, someone else decides to adopt 40 kids, someone else does this over here. It's wonderful. And the biggest job I think we have as human beings is to, first of all, honor and respect ourselves, because if we can't respect ourselves, how are we going to respect anything else? And then honor and respect how we can, as responsible people, contribute to life in a very special way. I think of Audie Murphy's life. Audie Murphy was a man that, he became so famous. He was a big movie star. He was a big war hero. Nobody ever knew about his wife, except the soldiers at the veterans' hospitals, where she served as a volunteer for many, many, many years. And the soldiers that came in wounded and battered, they were her boys. And she, when she passed away a few years ago, she left a legacy of love and faith and beauty and an example of giving the very best she had to those that she encountered. Some of them she never really knew their names. And this is a woman. It wasn't until after she died that the information came about how rich her life was and how much she was loved. Audie Murphy, his life was a mess. With all of the glory, with all the medals, with all of the various things, he was an alcoholic. He was totally, totally a mess. His legacy maybe is in Hollywood, but he never touched the hearts and minds the way his wife did. He abandoned her. So you hear of these stories and people and how they handle their lives and what they do with them. And I think that's something we need to be alert to. What kind of a legacy do we want to leave? What kind of an example do we want to be so that other people will look at us and when we leave this expression of life, we'll say to others, I'm so glad I knew this person. This other person, they've made such a difference in my life. When you can touch someone in that way, when you walk your walk in life with integrity, with purpose, with good solid values, and with joy in your heart, and you live your life as you believe it should be lived, honor and respecting others, giving the best that you've got. Let me tell you, you're going to leave a legacy that's going to go on for a long, long time. And it's amazing to me how sometimes those people who will never be written up in a People magazine or be on a newscast have the strongest impact. Why? Because they're who they are, and they keep that integrity. They don't try to be somebody else. And I think that that's part of life's journey, is learning about who we are and standing true, regardless of what the circumstances are, and not giving up. Don't buy in to fear. Don't buy in to lack. Don't buy in to what you perceive as impossible. Because somewhere along the line, someone's going to have a concept saying, this is possible. Jules Verne, he had all kinds of stories that he wrote. Long time ago, people said science fiction. We're living it today. Tesla, phenomenal scientist, before he died, was telling people, we can have vehicles that run on vibrational sound. Sci-fi movies have portrayed it. Are we doing it now? No. But our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren may have that actually in their lives. Impossible? I don't think so. Life is to be lived. Life is to be explored. And sometimes, we're going to have to acknowledge the impossible is possible. And you don't have to go to war. You don't have to steal from anybody. All you have to do is do it. It's a phenomenal thing. Life is an adventure, and you never know where it's going to take you. So don't give up on your dreams. Don't give up on who you are. Okay, summer here in the Pacific Northwest, we're positively giddy. The sun has blessed our environment. It is absolutely gorgeous here. We're enjoying temps in the 70s. Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. Because of that weather, we often like to have lighter foods. And I've got a wonderful recipe, so simple, for grilled salmon, potato, and asparagus salad. So after our break, I will be sharing that with you, so you might want to have a pad of paper and a pen to write it down. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about fitness beyond 50 with Harry Gaines. Yes. Now, for those of you that are in your 20s, you may say, Donna, please, I'm younger than 50. That's okay. Good health, good information can be utilized at any age, period. So Harry's going to be sharing some information that I think we'll find fascinating. And then Dr. Kevin Jones, is going to be with me on Thursday. This man is committed and dedicated as a physician, to be able to empower you as an individual. His book is What Doctors Can't Tell You. And this is something that is very unusual. So he's going to be my guest. And then on Friday, we'll be talking with Vanessa Talbot, Extraordinary You. Oh, this woman has had everything, lost it all, and came back. And she did what I was just talking about. She didn't give up. She found a solution, and it was not anything like she expected. So we're going to be talking with her on Friday. Oh, my goodness, we've just got so much to share with you today. And if you want me to share with you personally, give me a call at 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Topperson online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Topperson, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. All right, let's go for this recipe for this delicious salad. Actually, this salad, I think, if you enjoy lighter fare, it's just so easy to fix. And, of course, being in the Pacific Northwest, we love our salmon. It is just a marvelous fish. Now, this is what you're going to need. You're going to need about a pound of salmon fillet, and you want to remove the pin bones, of course. You're going to need some olive oil, some salt and pepper. You want about a pound of your small potatoes, little potatoes. There's all kinds of them. They have the finger potatoes that you can get, and their skins are so thin that just, you know, I would just cook them in the skins. But, you know, if you wanted to have different colored potatoes, but make sure that they're little because this is for a salad. You're going to need about 3/4 of a pound of asparagus, and you want to, of course, take the tough ends off. You're going to need about 4 dry-packed, sun-dried tomato halves, 3 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice. Now, fresh is best. If you don't have fresh available for any reason, you can use the bottled lemon juice, but it won't have that particular zing that comes with fresh lemon juice. You're going to need 1 tablespoon each of minced parsley and fresh dill, and 1 teaspoon of grated orange zest. And again, the freshly grated orange zest is best, and that's your orange rind. You don't want any of the white pith in there because it's bitter, but it's the orange oil in the skin that really gives this wonderful, wonderful flavor. And 1/2 teaspoon of minced garlic, 1/4 cup of extra virgin olive oil, and 6 to 10 ounces of mixed baby salad greens. Of course, you can get those by the bag. That's no big deal. And you want 3 green onions thinly sliced. If you don't like the onions, you can put them on the side so people could help themselves if they wanted to put it on the salad. Now, this is what you need. This is a grill dish, but you could also, as far as the salmon goes, you can grill the salmon, or you could actually do it in the broiler if you didn't have a grill. But this is what you do. The grill, you want to brush your salmon with oil, season it with salt and pepper, grill, turning it only once. The salmon will be opaque. It takes about 4 minutes per side. And then you want to transfer it to a plate. So your salmon is cooked, you transfer it to a plate. I always like to fix a little extra salmon because I like cold salmon. I like it in, believe it or not, scrambled eggs. I enjoy it in a number of different ways. But you put it on a plate, and it's going to cool to room temperature. And you put your potatoes in a large pot with water to cover. You bring them to a boil, reduce the heat to medium-low, cover and simmer until tender. Now, that's going to take about 15 minutes. So you could be grilling your salmon while the potatoes are cooking. Now, you're going to want to drain them, and you want to cut the potatoes in half. If they're of a larger size than bite size when you cut them in half, then just cut them into smaller pieces, whatever you like to do. Now, the potatoes do need to cool, so you actually could fix this in advance. You could fix the potatoes in advance, put them in the refrigerator, so the preparation for the salad, if you're having people over for a light lunch or dinner, this is something you can fix the potatoes ahead of time. Now, your asparagus, the steam, of course, is the best way to cook them, and takes 3 minutes. Bingo. You do it in the microwave if you want. Doesn't take any time at all, but you don't want them to be soggy soft. You want them to have that crispness to it. Then you want to rinse them under cool water after you've cooked them until they're cool. You pat them dry, put them to the side. Your tomatoes, your dried, sun-dried tomato halves. You want to put them in a bowl, cover it with boiling water, and let them stand for about 5 minutes. You're going to drain, chop, and You want to mix together the tomatoes, the lemon juice, your 2 tablespoons of water, parsley, dill, zest, garlic, salt, and pepper. And after you mix that, then you want to put in your 1/4 cup of your extra virgin olive oil. And if you don't have extra virgin olive oil, use whatever olive oil you like. The reason they recommend extra virgin is because it's the first press and it doesn't have the strong flavors. You go with other grades of olive oil and it becomes, it has a particular flavor that gets stronger and stronger with additional pressing. So that's why the extra virgin is recommended, so that you get the taste of the vegetables and the spices. They're more present when you use the extra virgin. Now, your greens, so simple. Toss them with your 2 tablespoons of the dressing that you have put together. The salmon skin, you want to take off the fish, and you want to then cut the meat into 4 pieces. You take your salmon, your asparagus, your potatoes, greens, and onions, and you just divide them among your 4 plates. It's for 4 servings. Or actually, this would make for a very good dinner for 2 people or a lunch for 2 people. So you only have to divvy everything up into 2 servings. And use the remaining dressing. And if you want, you've got your scallions. If you wanted them on the side, you just let people help themselves. A glass of wine, fresh crusty bread, and you have a wonderful, wonderful meal. Oh, and I'm doing a cheesecake recipe in my own kitchen, and I'm going to share it with you once I try it out and find out how it's going to turn out. Cheesecake is a funny thing. We don't always, it's not always going to turn out the way you think it is. And I've got a friend, she just couldn't get a cheesecake to work for her. She followed everything in the book exactly, and 4 hours later, she found that the cheesecake just wasn't done. She said, I don't know what I did wrong. It just didn't turn out right. She said, I have lousy luck with cheesecake. So I'm trying out a brand new recipe with cheesecake, and I'll fill you in on it and let you know how it tastes. And, of course, my husband is the taste tester in the house, so he will give me the final approval rating on that. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-627-6008. Oh, I was going to share with you some information. I think we're running out of time, but it was about circadian rhythms. So I think I'm going to share that with you tomorrow because it is coming soon. The change of time we have, our days are getting shorter, minute by minute, day by day. We're getting darkness now in the morning where it used to be bright and sunny. And it makes a difference with us. It really does. And the circadian rhythms in life have a tremendous effect on us in so many different ways. So I know we're running out of time here, but I do want to share some of that with you, so that will, I'll probably do that tomorrow. I also wanted to take this opportunity to thank those of you who are sending me these wonderful stories and video clips and all kinds of things. I'm not able to use it all on the show, but I really do appreciate it. And there was one item that I was going to share today, and we've run out of time. I'm not able to do it, so I'll try to share it with you tomorrow. I still appreciate it. I really, really do. And though I may not be able to use it, sometimes I like to put the information in my newsletter, which will be coming out on the 1st of the month. So just know that if you want to subscribe, you can send me an email, or you can call my office if you want to know about upcoming classes, which I've got one coming up November the 3rd, and that's going to be Quantum Mind 4. So there's more information that's going to be coming out about that. And if you're in Western Washington and you would like to register for that class, I'll be having some information after the 1st of the month that will be available to you. My goodness, we're out of time. This is Donna Siebel. So much to share, but we have more time tomorrow. So I'm so delighted you've been able to be with me today. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Siebel. We'll be back here same time, same place to share the best with you right here on the Donna Siebel Show. God bless. Have a fabulous day or evening wherever you might be. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.